Now, this is a true story.
We believe
it. It's true. A long, long time ago, God came down into the Garden of Eden and found out that Adam and Eve had had a bite of the forbidden fruit. So God blamed Adam, and Adam blamed Eve, and Eve blamed the serpent, and the serpent didn't have a leg to stand on. I've named this morning's sermon the final countdown, and strangely enough, I've done no breakfast this morning. We had a Christian channel on. Jack Van Impey spoke for about 10 minutes on part of what I got to say. Then Sharon started cleaning up. I sat in my chair and watched the next programme, as you do. And the guy who came on after, the Jewish Jesus, well, he pinched the other part of my sermon. So a bit of in between them. Anyway, here we go. This morning, I want to look at some scriptures in Matthew 24 and 25. They are scriptures that I believe have been misunderstood. In fact, they have been misunderstood so badly that it could have serious repercussions on some of the people. Let's have a look, a quick little look at Matthew 24. I should have put my bookmark in here. Matthew 24, and we look, read from 36 to 44, and I'm reading from the New King James Version. 36 to 44. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so will also be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in these days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving into marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them away, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field, one taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. I think everyone is familiar with this scripture, and most will say, if no one knows the time, the day, the hour, it's a waste of time thinking about it. But the scriptures preceding and following Matthew 24:36 consists of warnings about the day and the hour. You won't know the day or the hour, but you are instructed, ordered if you like, to know the season. Drop down to Matthew 24:42-44. Therefore keep watch, because you do not know on what day or hour the Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at which time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would have not have had his house broken into. So you must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. There are two vital instructions in that short passage. The one is, but understand this. And the second one is, you must be ready. Matthew 25, 1 to 13, talks about the ones who were ready and the ones who were not. The ones who said, no one knows the day or the hour, so why bother? And the ones who were ready, the ones who knew the season. It's the parable of the 10 virgins. At that time, the kingdom of heaven would be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps, but they did not take any oil with them. The wise, however, took oil in jars along with the lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all the virgins woke up, and they trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out. But no, they replied, there may not be enough for both of us. And you instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves. But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others came. Sir, sir, they said, open the door for us. But he replied, I tell you the truth. I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. Some of you may be thinking, if God knows everything, how can he say, I tell you the truth, I do not know you? Now, English is possibly the worst language in the world to explain things. Other languages would have more than one word for no, K-N-O-W. It would be a different word to know a person or an object or a place. It can also be a different word for knowing one well, like a close friend or family or a casual acquaintance. It would be a different word for someone you might say hello to in the street. Or maybe you stop and talk. In Welsh, there are two words for no. Gwybod and adnabod. Gwybod is to know, like knowledge. While adnabod is to know, but to recognize, to be familiar with something. And that is what Jesus is saying here. I am not familiar with you. I don't recognize you as mine. You are not family. It would be a different word to know as we understand it. In Matthew 24:37, it says, as it was in the days of Noah. Matthew 25 draws a comparison to Noah's days and the present days. When Noah was building the ark, he was properly looked on as the village idiot. Building a huge boat on dry land in a country that had never seen rain. Above the waterline, he built a door. At any time, the people could have walked up the gangplank to safety. But instead, they stayed outside and scoffed. The ark was never built to sail. It was only built to float. It was shaped like a coffin. Inside a coffin is usually death and dry bones. Outside is life. With this coffin-shaped boat, inside was life, and outside was death. It's the same with Jesus. With the death of Jesus, there is life. Outside is death. I got that wrong, didn't I? Inside the death of Jesus, there is life. Outside, there's death. In Matthew 25:10, we read, while they were on the way to buy oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. It was the same with Noah. The door was open. People could have walked in. And at the appointed time, the door was shut. Someone will be the last person to walk into the arms of Jesus, and then the door will be shut. Do you recognize the season? Many times in Bible study, I have talked about end times. This is a Bible study in Abbot Lairy. A cashless society, the mark of the beast. Recently, one of the ladies there, Corinne, said her grandson came home from school and said, money will soon be out of date, obsolete. Everyone will have a microchip in their body. All money transactions will be electronic. And Colin remarked that I'd said about this years ago. I don't think Christians will be involved in this, and I'll tell you why later. But do you recognise the season? We have to renew some electrical appliances in our kitchen. Now, all the appliances are built in, and that's a big mistake, let me tell you. Our choice is very limited, and it's expensive. A friend who is going to fit them will purchase them through his business account. And Shannon said to him, when you know how much they cost, we'll give you the cash. His reply was surprising. He didn't want cash, saying, cash is next to useless. All it's good for is buying a lettuce in the veg shop or a couple of pints in Wetherspoons. Do you recognise the season? Less than 5% of all transactions are cash. All others are electronic. When we bought this present car, we drew the money, well, cashed in an ISAC. We were going away on holidays, check came back, we put it in a deposit account in the bank. Went away to Gran Canaria, came back, went to pick the car up, transferred the money into a current account. Went down to the garage, paperwork. Shannon put the card into the machine, pressed in the numbers, refused. Did it again, refused. Luckily, Shannon had got a phone number that we could give a ring any problems. They had put the money into another account. Put the blame on us, reckoning that we'd give them the wrong card, but we only had one card on us, so we couldn't have given them the wrong card. But you see how easy it is. Your money's gone. One press of a computer button and you can't get hands on a penny. Without the knowledge of the Bible, the world will sleepwalk into disaster. The world will see the season, but they will not recognize it. However, if you have oil in your lamp, you will see clearly. Yeah, what does a lamp do? It lightens the darkness. That's what the Bible does, lighten the darkness. How many people realise that a cashless society is one of the 10,000 prophecies in the Bible? It's in Revelations 13, 16 to 17. In the meantime, let's remember Matthew 24, 43. Understand this. God will shut the door of the ark. shut it when the bridegroom comes. The door of the banqueting room will be shut. Matthew 25:14-30. A legalistic church could easily get this 100% wrong. Three men were given a considerable sum of money. One was given 5 talents, another 2, and a third 1. Each according to their ability. A talent in today's money would be several £100. 2 did the best they could and were rewarded. 1 did nothing with what he was given. Wasn't much expected of him. He was given according to his ability, and he reaped what he sowed. He sowed nothing, so his harvest was absolutely nothing. Now, a legalistic church could make a convincing sermon about these verses. They could claim, you have to work for your salvation. The ones who worked hard got the reward. The one who was lazy, didn't work, was rejected. That isn't what it's saying. 2 hymns come to mind that help eliminate these verses. The one is The Servant King, or its proper title is From Heaven You Came. Do you remember some of the words? From heaven you came, helpless babe, entered our world, your glory veiled, not to serve, but to serve, and to give your life that we might live. This is our God, our servant King. He calls us now to follow him, to bring our lives as a daily offering of worship to the servant King. In the last verse it says, so let us learn how to serve and in our lives enthrone him, each other's needs to prefer, for it is Christ we are serving. Christ served us, he gave us what we needed, salvation. By serving others, we serve God. In Matthew 25, the master gave the servants what they needed. 2 served him well, the other didn't. Serving others doesn't come easy. The second hymn that comes to mind was, Change My Heart, O God. Notice the composer asked God to change his heart. He couldn't do it himself, neither can we. Change my heart, O God, make it ever true. Change my heart, O God, may I be like you. You are the potter, I am the clay. Mold me and make me, this is what I pray. It's not about works, it's not about money either. Verses 21, verses 23 of Matthew 25, his master replied, speaking to the servants individually, well done, my good and faithful servants. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. Our servant king wants fellowship with us. Don't remember one sentence from today's message. Let it be this one. Come and share in your master's happiness. Let's just remind ourselves the extreme lengths God went to so we could share in his happiness. Philippians 2:6-8. When very nature God did not consider equality with God being something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Died on the cross so he could share his happiness with us. Back to Matthew 25:31. When the Son of Man comes in all his glory and all the angels with him, He will sit on his throne in heavenly glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left. If you asked the secular world to explain what's going on, I don't think they would have much of a clue. Some would read from Matthew 31 to 46 and guess it's Judgment Day. If they asked the church, who are the sheep and who are the goats, what answers do you think you'd get? You might get, we are the sheep, the world are the goats. The believers are the sheep, unbelievers are the goats. The wise virgin is the sheep, the foolish virgin is the goat. I don't believe we are the sheep or the goats. There is a third group of people. They are called the elect. I believe we are the elect. And I'll tell you why in a minute. Matthew 25, 1 to 30 tells us to be ready at all times to serve one another, to put others' needs first. Remember, joy is spelled Jesus first, others second, yourself last. It then gives warnings to those who put themselves first, the ones who are self-centered. Matthew 25, 1 to 30 is about present times. It's make the mind up time. Matthew 25, 31 to 46, I believe it's post-tribulation. It's Judgment Day. So who are the sheep and who are the goats? I feel I can only make an educated guess. The goats possibly are the ones who died without accepting Jesus as their saviour, together with the ones who took the mark of the beast in Revelations 13, 16 to 17. The sheep are the ones who went through the tribulation. They didn't take the mark. They didn't worship the Antichrist or the image of the beast. They went through the tribulation without any money. Many of them would have been put to death for refusing to take the mark of the beast. And that's Revelation 13, 16 to 17. It said, everyone, rich or poor, famous, unfamous, wherever you are, you will be forced to take the mark of the beast or you will be put to death. There's a series of books on the situation written by Tim LeWay and Jerry Jenkins on the post-trib. How many people will survive until Jesus returns to put an end to Satan? Let's drop back to Matthew 24, 30 to 35. At that time, the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heavens to the other. Now learn the lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs are tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Did you get it? Who will be with Jesus when he returns? The elect. Where does he gather them from? The heavens. I just read that sentence again. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of earth, from one end of heavens to the other. We cannot be in heaven and on earth at the same time. We cannot return unless we have left first.
Verse 32 talks about the fig tree. Who is the fig tree? The fig tree is Israel. When the leaves appear, you know that summer is near. It's telling you, you won't know the day or the hour, but you will know the season. Israel was reborn May the 14th, 1948. They regained Jerusalem 1967. If I was a betting man, I'd say summer is very near. However, there are a few loose ends that I need to tie up. Why would the bridegroom tarry? Why would he be late? Jesus is the bridegroom. You would think he would at least be on time. It's the privilege of the bride to be late. Usually, the bridegroom can't wait to get all of the formalities over and whisk his bride away on honeymoon. With all the problems in the world, with all the carnage caused by Muslim fundamentalists, the starving children in Africa, the diseases that are becoming resistant to antibiotics, to us it would make sense to put an end to this sooner rather than later. As far as I'm aware, there are two occasions in the Old Testament where the main man was delayed. When Moses was given the Ten Commandments, he was delayed from returning to camp. Many of the Israelites thought he was dead. So what did they do? They made a statue of a golden calf, had a party and worshipped the image. Similarly, when Solomon was delayed, Saul took over as master of ceremonies and angered God. It cost Saul his position as king. When the cat's away, the mice will play. When Moses and Solomon were away, the people took full advantage and did what they wanted. They knew what was right and what was wrong, but they thought they'd get away with it. Let's remind ourselves of Matthew 24, 48 to 51. But suppose the servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time. And he then begins to beat his fellow servants and eat and drink with drunkards. The master of the servants will come on a day when he does not expect him, and an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Could it be that Jesus is delaying his coming, delaying shutting the door, to give man ample opportunity to choose who they want to serve? In the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 19, God says, I set before you life and death, blessings and curses. For the very slow, he gave them the answer. He said, choose life. The choice is ours. Thank you for listening.